This week, this place is filled with bats. Not the bat you normally think of. Bad-ass teachers. We will find out more about this organization. Teachers, should they be advocates for our children? Well, this week's activist of the week was, until doing so got him fired. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Jed Hopkins. It's time to take a look at the top trending news stories in education. Number one.
Special education students in New York will no longer be allowed to graduate without a Regents diploma. That is out of the Long Island Herald. In fact, the story comes out, no Regents test means no diploma. What we're talking about here is taking students who typically have individual education plans, which is usually mandated by the federal government, and we are now telling them, according to this story, that you don't get a regular high school diploma or a Regents diploma. You have to get a special certificate. Parents are crying foul.
And they're crying foul because?
Well, they're looking at this and saying, wait a minute, my son now doesn't get to graduate. Because here's one of the particulars in this story that people need to pay attention to. Well, we're giving them a special certificate. However, as it's said in this story 3 to 4 different times, no one, colleges, businesses, anywhere, considers this special certificate the same as a high school diploma. Therefore, these students are considered dropouts.
Yeah. So in effect, they're not graduating.
Yeah. So we're going to take special education students and create a whole new subclass of people who can't do anything. Yeah. Wonderful. Thumbs up, New York. Way to go.
Yeah. I mean, this is the case of the testing tool wagging the educational opportunity dog.
Number two.
Florida recess possibly maybe might become law for students. That's out of the clickorlando.com. New Florida bill could make recess a right for students. Could. How is recess not a right for students, particularly K-5, as they identify the target group of students here? Right. We're looking at making K-5 mandatory recess instead of saying, wait a minute, you mean it wasn't anyway?
Right, exactly. It's a natural right. Right?
Wait, you mean children should be playing is what you're saying, Jed?
Yes.
That there should be no law behind that?
Exactly. I mean, but seriously, I mean, it's tragic, isn't it? We've got to make it a right. We've got to put it into the orbit of legality in order to make this happen.
I think the next thing that should be followed up in elementary schools in Florida is the right to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, there you go.
Number three.
You heard of No Child Left Behind. You heard of Race to the Top. But have you heard of Every Student Succeeds Act? Well, you should now, because that is the newest federal legislation that is taking the form of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. It looks like it's going to pass by an overwhelming majority, and President Obama will sign it. Everybody stand up and cheer. No, you should stand up and scream and yell, because there is, again, nothing in this that is educational. For me, just speaking right off the cuff, this is simply compliance-based education codified into federal law, making sure that students don't get educated.
So it got through the House.
Got through the House, overwhelming. Yeah. And the reason why they think it's going to pass in the Senate is it's mostly a Senate bill anyway.
Right.
And President Obama has already said, send it to me, I'm going to sign it. So this is going to be the new law of the land, the new Elementary and Secondary Education Act. Every Student Succeeds Act. Federally, though, there are no standards required. Standards are dropped down to the state. Good or bad?
Well, I think not good.
See, now, because according to some people, this is a better bill than what's existed in the past, because federal accountability has been stripped and given to the states, where some people say it belongs. I say it depends on what state.
Exactly.
And how about the whole idea of accountability being prescribed by legislators instead of teachers?
There you go.
That's my problem I have with it again. So here we are, deja vu all over again. We're back to where we started. No Child Left Behind, Elementary Secondary Education Act, totally a disaster.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Fully leaded education talk.
Today our guests are Steven Singer and Marla Kilfoyle. They are bats, badass teachers. Marla, Steven, welcome to Busted Pencils. Marla, give us a quick rundown of your teaching background.
Well, I've been a public school teacher for 29 years. I teach in New York. I have taught in urban areas, rural areas. I'm currently teaching in a suburban area in Long Island, New York. I am also the executive director of the organization, and I am the mother of a 12-year-old little boy who goes to public school.
And don't forget, you're a badass.
And I'm a badass, yeah.
All right. And Stephen, how about you?
Well, first, let me just say what an honor it is to be on Busted Pencils. Long-time listener, first-time guest. I'm a eighth-grade language arts teacher out in near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I've been an activist for a while with everything that was going on in Pennsylvania, where they started to slash our budgets and downsize everything with the schools. You know, when BATS was out there, I joined pretty early and just, trying to be as badass as I can.
Well, how has this, belonging to this organization, transformed your way of being an educator?
I think that, I wrote a piece about 3 weeks ago that talked about, I think all teachers are child advocates. You're a child advocate from the first time you step into a classroom. So I kind of feel like over the last, I would say, decade or so, it's gotten pretty bad. I'm in a really good position in New York, and plus I'm also an elected union official, where I feel like I can speak out a lot more than maybe other teachers could, for example, like in a right-to-work state, right? So I feel like the organization has, in my personal opinion, just where I'm at, has really given me a platform to be able to advocate on a national level, but also to give those teachers a platform who don't have a voice to be able to tell their stories about what's happening in public education. So I feel like for me, with the organization, which is over 2.5 years old now, and it's, people were saying, oh, it's just a Facebook group. Well, we had the Nevada batch yesterday lead a protest on the Las Vegas Strip yesterday. So it's not just a Facebook group anymore. We have BATS mobilizing on the ground around the nation. So for me, it's giving that voice to people. It's being able to speak the truth about what's really going on in our classrooms, support others that might need it, because we have this network that we could do that. So I guess it's sort of a multi-pronged thing for me. That's kind of how it would define for me.
All right. So Stephen, now what is a BAT?
Well, for me, a BAT is someone who's in a community. It's a place where I know I'm not alone, that what I'm facing is shared, and so we can have shared solutions. It's a place committed not just to commiseration and shared grievances, but to shared action, to overcome it together for our profession, our students, and our children. I have a button that I wear on all my clothes when I go to school, just a little bat button with a little symbol and just says bat. And sometimes the kids will say to me, Mr. Singer, what is that? And sometimes I'll just tell them the name and that's enough. And sometimes I'll have to go into the explanation about what it is, especially with administrators. And whenever you tell them, what that means, you get that kind of look like, wow, that's really something.
Has an administrator given you support and or non-support when you say, hey, I'm a badass teacher, I'm part of this group that advocates for, kids in public schools?
Well, I've never had outright backlash, but I have had that kind of look of fear on their face, like, whoa, this is one I got to be careful of.
Seeing an administrator with fear on their face in front of a teacher is not necessarily a bad thing, okay? So that in itself is good.
Sometimes I'll hear administrators, they kind of try to take that middle ground, oh, hey, I agree with you, standardized tests aren't that great, but, then there's always that but
yeah.
We got to do this, we got to do that. I hear you, but we're still going to do all the horrible stuff you don't want us to do.
Right. Marla, how about you? Any backlash for being a bat?
No. When we booted up in June of 2013, I kind of was able to go under the radar until about November. And then I did get called up to the superintendent's office. And we had actually a two-hour conversation specifically about why I was against Common Core. But there are no repercussions. I've had kind of people say stuff about the name, like, why would you name the group that? And I'm like, well, first of all, I didn't name the group that. It was born out of actually badass parents. but secondly, now I just tell people, and Priscilla Sandstead, who's one of the co-founders of the group, she said it perfectly. She said, teachers quietly raising their hands, waiting to be called on, is gone. And so we sort of figured that this name was the fact that these were a like-minded group of teachers that we're not going to sit there and raise our hands quietly and wait for people to call on us to tell us so that we could explain what was wrong, right? We're going to tell you. And, you know, if we're going to sit at the table, we're not going to wait for you to call on us, and we're not going to sit there quietly like little sheep. We're going to tell you what the deal is. Yeah, I haven't really had any backlash, to be honest with you.
You mentioned, you know, the importance of giving voice, and you mentioned the origin of the name being connected with a parental organization. So let me ask you, how is BAT, that organization, situated with parents? Is it able to give voice to parents as well? Is it facilitating what parents should be thinking about?
That's such a great question. It is. And I think sometimes what a lot of people tend to forget is that teachers are also parents. Mm-hmm. I'm a parent. And so I always tell people, don't negate my voice as a parent because I'm a teacher. We've worked really closely. In fact, United Opt Out is one of our amazing allies, and we love United Opt Out. You know, I work very closely here in Long Island with Jeanette Guterman, who is the head of Long Island Opt Out. And, you know, we had a huge opt out rate here in New York, and that was a coalition of really mostly parent led and with teachers. So I feel like that is, you know, it's not really just a teachers group. You know, we do have parents in the group. Parents mobilized with us on the ground. We did have, probably as you know, four of our teachers who were teachers of conscience in Washington who refused to give the test last year. So, you know, I think that, you know, like Diane Ravitch said, you know, once the parents and the teachers join up, game over. And I think the game is over at this point. We're winning the war.
I love that. Stephen, I mean, you're also a parent. Has this helped you in communication when you take on that parent role and you speak to other parents?
Definitely. I think you can talk to pretty much any parent of a grade school student, and all you have to do is talk to them about the homework their kids have to do. They might not understand that it has to deal with Common Core or what it has to do with education policy, but if you just start talking about, hey, did you see that homework that was given out the other day? That'll start the conversation because, you know, my daughter is in first grade. And I can't tell you how many times I've looked at this first grade homework and I've had to write on it, I'm sorry, I have no idea what you're asking my daughter to do. So just from that visceral thing that just about every parent has experienced, it opens a door of conversation. It's a place where you can start to put together the dots, because I think for a lot of parents, they see the dots, but they haven't quite put them together yet. So BATS is a place where parents and teachers can get together to talk about this and say, this is why this is happening. Mm. And I think it really does start a lot of conversations, and a lot of BATS are parents, whether they're teachers or not.
That's a great way to think about it, too. And I'm looking over at Chad, the idea of more conversations, mm-hmm. because
communication.
Communication about education, because we sometimes, you know, even in our role as teacher educators and then your roles as teachers, again, each of us starts to have a language that we forget that sometimes we might not know what we're saying to each other. And so that open communication, but particularly this idea, if we're going to reform, and I do believe in ed reform the way I think the BATS want it, the way United Opt Out wants it, the way Busted Pencils wants it. If we're going to do that, the more people we are communicating with, making positive strides with, particularly parents, because parents are out there, they're on the receiving end of all of this other ed reform, corporate ed reform. And so it's great to have a group like BATS out there who are able to translate that, even just, you know, simply, you know, you are feeling something negative. You are listening to Busted Pencils. We are interviewing Stephen Singer, Marla Kilfoyle, BATS, Badass Teachers. So I'm listening to the show and I've just been transformed. I want to be a BAT. What do I do?
Well, there's lots of places you can go. If you're on Twitter, you can go to Badass Teachers A and follow us on Twitter, hashtag TBATS. We have a closed Facebook page that you have to request to join, which has over 56,000 people that have followed it. We have a website, badassteacher.org. If you're not on social media, you can sign up we send out a weekly newsletter about what we've been doing and what's going on. We are also on Pinterest. We have a huge following on Pinterest. Google Badass Teachers on Pinterest, you can find us.
You have members in all 50 states, correct?
Yep. We have Facebook pages in every state. We have, our largest is New York. We have our very busy Florida, very busy Tennessee, Ohio, California. You can Google it, and we have Facebook pages in every single state. And we also have international BATS. We have BATS in Britain, BATS in Australia, BATS in New Zealand. We just got a message last night about a BATS in Ontario. They want to start a group up there. So we're going international.
Marla, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today. Badass teachers. Check them out on the web. Check them out on Facebook.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you so much.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Fully leaded education talk.
This week's activist of the week was just that until he got fired for doing so. Gus Morales, welcome to Busted Pencils.
Well, you know, the story isn't so simple. I started teaching in Holyoke, Massachusetts in 2011, the fall. And for the first 2 years that I was teaching, I started noticing a trend with all my teachers and all my students, and that was a lot of misery. And in 2 years of having to deal with all of that, it started affecting me personally. I started thinking to myself that I've got to do something about it, otherwise I can't look myself in the mirror. And what happened is, in the fall of 2013, I essentially gave notice to the administration that I was going to start speaking out, and I started to. I started sending emails to to my principal. I started sending emails to anybody who would listen. And when I felt I wasn't getting anywhere because I was sticking very locally, I decided in February of 2014 to attend a school committee meeting and really make my issues known publicly. So on February 3rd, 2014, I showed up at the school committee and I started talking about data walls.
Just quickly, in case anybody forget or doesn't know new data walls, I mean, we've seen them, but what is a data wall?
So data walls, in case you don't know, it's essentially public shaming of students. You'll have people tell you that it's for building up competition amongst the students, but I call it what it is. It's public shaming. It's the same reason we no longer use the Gold Star system, because we realized that in the long term it was affecting students negatively. It was affecting their self-worth, their self-confidence, and how they value themselves. And so data walls actually take that practice and make it that much worse.
Okay.
What they do is they essentially post publicly student test scores. And what you have is an effect where even the top scoring students are as affected as the lowest scoring students. So the lowest scoring students are affected in the sense that they feel less valuable. They feel less worth because they're not as good as they are supposed to be according to the metrics.
Mm.
And then you have the top scorers feeling isolated from everybody else because they somehow are doing better than everybody else. So it's negatively impacting everybody. And this is a practice that I found to be reprehensible. And this is a practice that I wanted to bring attention to. And so I showed up at the school committee meeting and I told the school committee. Most of them had no idea what I was talking about. This was the first they were hearing of it. That's how swept under the rug it was. So I started that in February. And then as the months continued, I brought up other issues. You know, myself and my colleagues, you know, members of Badass Teachers and members of Taking It Back, we all got together and we started, you know, attacking the high-stakes testing, the data-driven instruction, and all the insanity that has plagued public school in the last decade. And so it maybe last 2 to 3 decades, but very, very prominently in the last decade.
Right.
And in May of 2014, I was elected president of the Holyoke Teachers Association.
Okay.
And for the administration that I was working for at that point, that was the last straw for them. They're like, this guy's already making enough trouble. There's no way we can have him be president on top of everything else. And in June of 2014, I was fired.
Okay. And you were fired with tenure?
No. Part of the revolution I'm trying to start is this idea that we need to have professional teacher status, a.k.a. tenure, in order to get ourselves involved in a fight and really engage in this fight. And I wanted to bring truth to that issue because I was a non-tenured, non-professional status teacher. And here I was taking over my local union. Here I was standing up for my students. Here I was standing up for my colleagues. Here I was standing up for my city. Here I was talking about the issues predominantly affecting black and brown youth. And I didn't care that I didn't have tenure. I didn't care that I was a non-professional status teacher. I knew that it was wrong what was happening, and I knew that I needed to speak out. And I felt it a perfect opportunity to show other teachers in my city and across the country that you don't need tenure, you don't need anything to fight injustice.
But they decided otherwise.
Not
your colleagues, but the administration decided, so wait a minute, Gus Morales, we can't have this, and we're gonna quiet you.
I'm a lot to handle. I'm extremely difficult to contain. I cannot be controlled, and that to them is the scariest concept in the world, is a teacher that they cannot control, that they cannot get to comply with their demands. And so they fired me in June of 2014. After a long legal struggle, in November of 2014, I was reinstated, only to be fired again in June of 2015.
What was the second reason for firing?
It's the same exact thing all over again. So the second year, I was officially the president of the union for that whole year. And I caused a lot of trouble. And when I say I caused a lot of trouble, some people misunderstand me.
Right.
My version of trouble is sticking up for people. I see somebody getting bullied. I see teachers getting bullied. I see students getting bullied. I'm going to say something about it and cause trouble.
It's not trouble that you're causing. It's sticking up for what's right, largely, mostly for teachers. And, you know, particularly when it comes to this data wall, what's best for kids, you know? And as an academic, I can also point out that what you were doing, there is a ton of research talking about the negative effects that data walls have on students. And
absolutely.
So what you were doing there, it wasn't just you saying, hey, I'm gonna be mouthy and cause trouble. You were doing what's best for kids, according to what we know. So where are we right now then?
My hearing with the administration, with the Department of Labor Relations, is in December. So we're up in the air right now. We don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Okay.
But I do want to talk about real quick what you just mentioned about this idea that I stood up for my children. And I think really all teachers should be doing the same thing. I gave a TED Talk in April of this year, and it was something from a speech I'd given in Washington, D.C. at the BATS rally in 2014 that summer. And it was about the Educratic Oath. Every teacher should take that oath and say that they will do nothing at all that they know will be harmful to their children. And that's an oath that I took myself. That's an oath that every teacher should take. We've got to think beyond our jobs, beyond our mortgages, beyond our car payments and everything else. And we've got to think about what's really right for our future, what's really right for the children. And for me, my moral compass travels with me wherever I go, regardless of whether I'm school or at the gym or at the bar, wherever I am. When something is wrong, I'm going to call it out.
Well, Gus, let me tell you what. I want to say congratulations for being the Busted Pencils Activist of the Week.
Thank you, Tim.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk.
Bats, bats, bats. Makes me think, what would Matt Damon's mom say about bats?
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
Well, what do I think of when I hear badass teacher?
Yeah.
Well, in fact, I heard badass teacher for the first time when it came out of Diane Ravitch's mouth at her book talk when her second book came out. And it hit me. See, that is a strong name. That's a name that puts you on alert, right?
Right.
And you say, all right, if someone's calling themselves a badass teacher, they've got to be critically aware. Mm-hmm. They've got to be alert. They're not afraid.
Mm-hmm.
They must know what's going on, and they must be saying something about it. And I'm not that familiar with the badass teachers, though I have now a couple of good friends on the DEY advisory board who are working with them. And but it seems to me they've got to be, you know, fearless. They've got to be, well, they're not, you know, they're not people in the field for 2 years. They're probably dedicated teachers. They probably know kids. They probably really care about their work, and they know what's going on. This is all that name conjures up for me, that you have to be understanding what's happening in the field and be willing to stand up and say something about it.
Yeah, it's one of those names, you know, like you don't name your son Spike and then
right.
think he's going to play the cello.
Exactly. Or a musician named Edge.
That's right, the Edge.
Yeah, and I love this name. It's a name that makes you wake up. That's probably the best thing about it. It makes you wake up, and that's what we need, because everyone is sleeping their way through a complete educational disaster in this country.
In our special tribute to Howard Zinn this week, we just heard from Matt Damon's mom. Let's hear from Matt Damon.
I start from the supposition that the world is topsy-turvy, that things are all wrong, that the wrong people are in jail and the wrong people are out of jail, that the wrong people are in power and the wrong people are out of power, that the wealth is distributed in this country and the world in such a way as not simply to require small reform, but to require a drastic reallocation of wealth. I start from the supposition that we don't have to say too much about this, because all we have to do is think about the state of the world today and realize that things are all upside down. Now, if you don't think, if you just listen to TV and read scholarly things, you actually begin to think that things are not so bad, or that just little things are wrong.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Also, log on to BustedPencils.com to keep up with trending news, hear parts of the show, and nominate an activist of the week. For Jed Hopkins, I'm Tim Slecker, and thanks for busting pencils.